Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Tuesday, June 3rd, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Wadid Ahmed, and we've got a great show for you today. So firstly, we're going to be discussing how His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, Crown Prince of Dubai, has visited the world's largest diamond exchange at DMCC. Secondly, it seems to be that cloud kitchens are like booming right now in the GCC, and K-Crew is leading the charge. Thirdly, this UAE-based flower company created a Labubu bouquet worth $8,000, and we're going to speak more about the financials behind Pop Mart. And finally, this Dubai real estate CEO has actually pushed back on Fitch's 15% property drop forecast and said that it's simply inaccurate.
And the very first story of the day is about the Dubai Multi-Commodity Center, or DMCC. It has officially hit a major milestone. Over 1 billion carats of diamonds traded. On June 2nd, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Crown Prince of Dubai, toured the Dubai Diamond Exchange inside Almaz Tower, the world's largest diamond tender facility, guided by DMCC's Executive Chairman and CEO, Ahmed bin Sulaim.
Now, this visit, it really does highlight how the UAE is growing its dominance, and it's growing its global role, especially in diamond trading. So DMCC, headquartered in the Jumeirah Lake Towers district, is now home to more than 24,000 companies, with around 117 new businesses joining every single month. And I think what's even crazier is that their diamond trade reached a value of $38 billion in 2023, with the UAE maintaining its spot as the world's leading hub for rough diamond trade since 2021.
And inside the Dubai Diamond Exchange, traders have access to 41 high-tech viewing stations, advanced security, and the DDE vault. In 2024, the largest polished diamond auction in Dubai's history was hosted at the exchange, showcasing over 50,000 carats. And lab-grown diamonds are gaining traction too, with trade volumes hitting $1.6 billion last year in 2024.
But I think what's really special about DMCC is that their momentum, it's not just limited to diamonds. You know, over the last 5 years, precious stones trading has surged by 177%. Precious metals rose by 74%. Energy by 72%, and even coffee and tea trades have shown consistent growth thanks to the really specialized centers that DMCC has.
And this sustained growth now means DMCC contributes to 15% of Dubai's foreign direct investment and 7% of its GDP. With its integrated infrastructure and global appeal, DMCC continues to position Dubai as a powerhouse for commodities trading on the world stage.
I think for me, what's really significant with this story is that you have the chairman of DMCC, giving His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, otherwise known as Fazza, a tour around the DMCC lounge, a tour around the diamond auction, and I think this is a kind of relationship between citizens and royals that you don't see a lot in many countries.
Yeah, you just don't see them strolling around places like the ruler of Dubai right now, Mohammed bin Rashid, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid. He's at coffee shops. His Highness Sheikh Hamdan is having casual lunches with top CEOs from the world. So it's very nice to see that they feel safe around people, normal people. Whenever you see them in the crowd, the videos that come out, people go crazy watching them. And I think the most crazy thing is that you don't expect them. You don't expect leaders across the globe to just walk around, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And you feel safe. These guys do. They know they're doing something good, and they're not scared of the people.
But you know what it is, Majid? Much more so than the fact that they're extremely protected, of course, and there's a lot of security.
Yeah.
I think it's the way that the business ecosystem in the UAE is built. I remember I was listening to Amal Al-Marri, the Emirati co-founder of Salt, speaking, and she was basically telling the story of how for her and her other Saudi co-founder Dima, that when they created Salt, her aim was to make the locals in the country, the Emiratis, for them to feel like tourists and for the tourists to feel like locals.
Yes.
And in that moment, from, you know, knowing so many Emiratis and growing up with them, that point resonated with me, because you know, in this Arabic culture, in this Emirati culture, in the Gulf culture, in fact, they are very private people.
Yeah.
You know, people are very cocooned in their homes. They don't like to be out in the public, in front of people. So I think the fact that, you know, Fazah is out and about, and you see a lot of these really special figures out there, is because it's the ecosystem in itself. It has businesses that have made people feel like it's worth stepping out of your home, you know?
You went to DMCC, if I remember correctly, for some afternoon tea or some, or someone else went from our team. We did a food thing. I think Natasha went or someone went. I've lived in that DMCC building.
Really?
So uptown. You went to uptown, right?
Oh,
yeah, it's in the same DMCC building.
I was there. Oh,
it's such
my
a nice place, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. It's really
so
beautiful.
So it has a hotel there, so uptown. It has these offices. All
wow,
the
Majid, I did not even remember that, honestly.
I remembered that you went to
a show. In my head, I was going to Uptown Social.
Yeah, but it's a very nice place. It's such so many things. There's a crypto center in DMCC. There's another. There's so many things inside DMCC that when you go deep and His Excellency Ahmed bin Sulaym, the head of DMCC, he's very vocal. Whenever he meets someone, he puts up a post. He met Van Damme. He literally meets someone every day, and he's very active on social media. One of the things we love about these people. I remember Word was telling that Khalifa Luptur is so social media
he's
savvy.
He's my favorite influencer.
Yeah. So I really like these people like Ahmed bin Sulaym, Khalifa Luptur, who actually have taken on social media and they share things. They tell people what's happening, who's coming, who's not. So yeah, very nice to see this, the whole thing. Next up, we're talking about Cloud Kitchens. And Cloud Kitchens are cooking up something new in the GCC IPO ambitions, basically. As the region's food delivery sector matures, UAE-based startup K-Crew is emerging as a serious challenger to global giants. Founded in Dubai in 2020 by Jihad Al-Eid, K-Crew evolved from a dine-in chain, Manoush Street, into a fully tech-enabled food tech operation.
It was actually also co-founded by Fawaz Al-Otaiba.
Nice.
And so unlike Cloud Kitchen unicorns that are chasing franchise deals, what basically makes K-Crew so special is that it takes this brick and click approach. You know, hang in there with me. Basically, it's about like transforming existing dine-in locations into AI-powered delivery hubs. So it currently operates around 45 kitchens across the UAE and Saudi Arabia, with virtual brands like Manoush Street, the Palestinian Bakery, the Good Bowl, and FOMO Burger.
And the company uses machine learning and in-house R&D to customize menus in real time and optimize operations. It also controls the full value chain from sourcing to delivery, allowing for greater data-driven efficiency. As of 2022, K-Crew employed over 700 staff and operated in key cities across the UAE and Riyadh.
And so with over $25 million raised in early stage funding and investors, including Abdul Majid Al-Hukair and Thera Investment Company, K-Crew is actually now eyeing a potential IPO. It basically has this like march towards 500 strategy, aiming for $500 million in sales across 50 brands and 50 locations for over 50 months. I have to tell you, they are really ambitious.
Yeah. As IPO chatter grows louder in the GCC food tech scene, K-Crew is helping redefine what homegrown innovation looks like, one virtual brand at a time. Its rise signals a new chapter for the region's cloud kitchen economy, led not by franchises, but by local tech-first disruptors. And cloud kitchens, yeah, Kitopi is the biggest one, but the idea was very great because K-Crew, all the brands under them are local. Mm-hmm. So even when they acquired brands, they acquired local brands. Meanwhile, Kitopi has global brands under them as well. I think Pizza Hut, Papa John's, a lot of... I remember both the pizza places. I don't know why. I think I'm craving pizza. It's Tuesday. But yeah, so they have a lot of international chains also working under them. But K-Crew, very nicely, I was interested to see the Palestinian bakery in there. It's a bakery. It's a nice bakery. We should find it and do a story on it.
Yeah.
And this is a very nice setup. I hope whenever they go for IPO. Right now, they are EBITDA, EBITDA positive. So even if they go for a IPO, it's a good time. Mm-hmm. Overall, the IPO market is not really good. Another IPO 2 days ago.
Why do you seem to be smiling about it?
Yeah, it's weird because the Dubai IPO.
Imagine, you're smiling. Yeah, no, it's kind weird. Of doing bad right now.
Sometimes when it's euphoria of knowing that IPO market is very weird right now. Mm. It's just that, I think.
And the euphoria of knowing that I did not miss out by not investing.
So Dubai REIT, the recent IPO, the first IPO in the UAE, in Dubai this year on DFM, it did really great. Was oversubscribed, opened up, went 15-20% up, is still there. The problem is that Saudi IPOs are not doing great. And it's weird to find that out because last year, I remember, all the IPOs that happened, there was like 20 plus. Exact number in my mind is 23, but it was 20 plus. And Talabat was the biggest tech one. Lulu was one of the biggest ones. But this year, IPOs are less and Saudi IPOs are doing bad. Yesterday, a company, it started with Z, I forgot the name. They listed on Nomu, which is the parallel market for the smaller companies, to Tadawul, the Saudi main exchange. And it fell flat on its face. Some days ago, we talked about United Cartons. Mm. They listed on Tadawul, the main exchange. They fell flat. So right now, it's very weird.
You know what?
You don't want
be?
To list in Saudi Arabia
you know
right
what
now.
It actually might be, though, Majid. I think it's the fact that in Saudi Arabia, the market is so oversaturated. It's like, as you said, when you mentioned Talabat, when you mentioned Lulu Hypermarket.
Both I of think, them are here.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the UAE, you have a few options, but they're very, very excellent options. I think in Saudi Arabia, what happened is that you have so many companies that are trying to go for an IPO, and so many have already gone for one. And apparently, I read somewhere that there's like over 50 applications that are still waiting on Tadawul. So I think it's the oversaturation of options that's perhaps causing
the thing is that more IPOs are good for any stock exchange. So 50 applications. The problem that I think the Saudi IPO market, Tadawul, and also the UAE market and overall the Middle East, let's not talk about the world, let's focus on Middle East, all of them faced was the Trump tariffs. So as soon as those were announced, going for an IPO was a bad option because the markets were down and listing and no one was buying, everyone was selling. So going for an IPO was a bad idea. But now since they're on pause and sooner or later, we will need. We will find out that if he's extending that 3 month pause or not. Right now, the market is good. Like they don't care about the tariffs right now. So it's a good idea right now to go for an IPO. It's not a bad idea. Flynas will soon list. We've done so many stories on them. Who else? There's another big company. I completely forgot. They also put out their.
What was it?
Which one was it?
Tabby, I believe Tabby and
Tabby
Kitobi.
Tabby
both said that they're planning it. They're planning it.
Some companies are saying they're planning it. Kitobi also said that they plan to
like
do it in 2 to 3 years.
I believe.
Yeah, so it's 2 to 3 year pipeline. But apart from Flynas, another, like the whole manifesto of what the prices are, what's good. Two came up. Why am I forgetting it? Flynas and another one. But the main idea is that it's good time to go for IPO, not a bad time. It was a bad time when the tariffs were announced. But still, they're falling flat in Saudi Arabia. They're doing good in UAE. I think the oil prices, the Saudi economy right now is also in problem because oil prices are down. And as soon as the oil prices go down, their Aramco shares go down, their whole economy goes down, their budget deficit increases, basically. So it's so much interlinked that Saudi is not... I'm not saying bad things about Saudi. It's just the oil prices somehow are affecting Saudi economy.
I remember. I read somewhere. I believe it was some Saudi minister, but basically they had said that for us to actually carry out all of our projects and meet our specific goals, we need oil per barrel to be at least at $90.
Oh, that's
I remember this. I read it somewhere. I believe it was
it's
on.
Bloomberg has a international index where they see oil prices how they affect. So Bloomberg's price right now is 90. It was at 80 last year. We talked about it a lot. Now it's at 90 barrels. So Saudi, all the projects, NEOM, their entertainment projects, their Riyadh Expo, their World Cup, everything that they have in the pipeline, they need $90 per barrel of oil. It's not there. It's very low. It's 60, 70. It's fluctuating a little nowadays because of all the geopolitical things that are happening in the region. But they need it at 90. It's not at 90, so they're at a problem. Remember, AGBI did an exclusive that A lot of projects which come under PIF, which is one of them is NEOM. So there's like 200 companies, and a lot of them have like cut off 20% of their budgets. So that was an LGBI exclusive. So they're doing that. They're trying to, like, whatever money they have, do something in that.
But I think priorities are definitely necessary. Yeah, and I think with priorities, people don't have them in order lately because they're buying Labubus. And basically what happened, this Dubai-based floral company, flower.ae, they only operate online. They launched this extravagant bouquet in the shape of a Labubu, and it's worth $8,000. I mean, guys, that is basically 29,000 dirhams. And what this bouquet does, it just really blends a bunch of roses together in different colors. But I think most importantly, it's spotlighting Labubu's growing influence far just beyond the shelves and social media.
Yeah, and Labubu, Snaggletooth's elf-like character created by Hong Kong artist Kasing Lung, gained cult status after being picked up by Chinese toy giant Pop Mart in 2019. The brand exploded globally in 2024 last year, helped by a single Instagram post from Blackpink's Lisa, which sparked a 30% sales spike in just 1 week.
And now you're seeing celebrities like Hoda Kotb and Rihanna and Paris Hilton who've like jumped on the trend. And like LJ from like, what is that show called? Dubai Bling. Yes, yeah. LJ from Dubai Bling. And they're like all sharing their like Labubu toys on their social media platforms. And they're just giving this toy so much attention across the UAE's influencer scene. Now, the collectible's popularity is amplified by Pop Mart's blind box model, where buyers don't know which figure they're actually going to get. And I think that this is such a smart marketing approach, because you have people constantly buying the boxes because they either want to get Hee or ZZ. And resale prices are apparently up to $2,000.
It's very weird. My wife has already bought three and she still hasn't gotten what she wants. We have an office Labubu. We should have put it here today for the show. If my producer can quickly run and bring our Labubu, it's on Sandra's desk and we can show it. We have an office Labubu now. But financially, Labubu is no small toy. In 2024 alone, Pop Mart's revenue surged to $1.8 billion.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and with Labubu's The Monsters series accounting for $419 million, up over 726% year on year. The company's net profit doubled to $479 million, while its stock jumped 350%. It's not a small jump, boosting founder Wang Rang's fortune by $1.6 billion in a single day. He became $1.6 billion richer in a single day.
That is crazy. Yeah. According to Fortune, to Forbes. So basically, Pop Mart now operates 401 stores and over 2,300 robot vending machines globally, which people are standing in such long lines for. And basically now it's actually setting its sight on expansion into North America and Europe. But not everyone's cheering. You know, critics are actually raising concerns about the blind boxes model and its like addictive nature. Ooh, we got one here. Which one is this one? I forgot the name.
This one is Dada.
Dada.
So this is Dada. Dada.
Okay, she's cute.
So we have Labubus in our office.
No, this one's actually the creepy one, Majid.
No, but you look at it in the first look, you're like, oh, red eyes, evil. But it actually has hearts in his eyes. But yeah, there's like the six of them, which are the normal ones.
I like how you're calling it his. That's a her.
Dada, I think it's a cute wordplay for the dad, I think. But there's Baba also. There's a B-A-B-A. There's Q-Q-Q-U-U-Q-U. And there's he's easy, which word said. And there's another one. And then there's a secret one. So sometimes out of the box, a secret one comes out.
And you know what they're basically saying with Pop Mart? That you should buy into their shares right now. People are actually going crazy over this. If you guys see the lines, we even had a giveaway. Love in Dubai did a giveaway. Oh, wow. Love in Dubai basically
love it.
Love in Dubai did a giveaway for Labubus. And woman literally won it and drove all the way from Sharjah in the time frame of 1 hour to come pick up her Labubu, even though she had has like eight hung on her bag.
Nice.
And then when she came to pick it up, she basically informed, I believe it was Casey, of how she like was standing in long lines over the weekend over the Little Things, the Little Things stores to actually get it. I just, look, to be honest with you, everyone wanting it did kind of make me want one. I want to own one. And be like, you know what? Like at some point in a decade, be like, I owned a Labubu. But I would never stand in the heat of Dubai or like anywhere to get something.
Now, there's a secret trick. You heard it first here, which me and my wife, actually my wife told me this. There's a little things in MOE. So if you go to MOE, you'll face so many lines. And maybe there may come a point when you reach the counter, it's sold out. There's a little thing on the Blue Waters Island. So go there. It's usually empty. The very first time I went and bought them, there was no one in the store. And I went inside and the founder was there. And I was like, oh, do you remember we were doing it?
Yeah.
And I remembered him. And I was like, oh. And I asked him. And he told me a very interesting story. Thankfully, it wasn't off the record. Whatever he said next was off the record. He said that they got the shipment at 2 a.m. in the night. 2 a.m. in the night, they got the shipment, it landed, they brought all that stuff, put it in the stores.
How much did you buy it for, man?
It's 79 at Little Things, but resale...
79 dirhams?
But noon, you can get it for 200.
290.
290?
Saw that. Oh. Even on Kareem.
I just saw two and I was like, no, don't watch
it. They're selling it for 290 dirhams, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I would never do that.
People are buying it. That's the funny thing. I can't name the guy who in our office who bought it, but he bought it from noon. For a very high price, and he could have gone to Little Things. We're not promoting them. It's just the craze. And the funny thing is the finances behind it. The guy having $1.5 billion added to his money over a day.
Gotta believe in a
became
vision.
If he was a millionaire, he became a billionaire overnight. He just slept and woke up and he was a billionaire because Blackpink's Lisa.
But by the way, it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
For a very long while. It just out of nowhere became extremely famous.
One person did it and everyone ran with it. But it's a very interesting story. And Word was right. I saw this Monify video also saying that you should buy, instead of buying Labubu, go buy the stocks.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
I love
very interesting. Yeah.
But so, anyways, for our
last
story.
What else to buy in Dubai is?
Real estate. Indeed. So basically, there was this new report from Fitch Ratings, and it's actually raising a lot of eyebrows across Dubai real estate agents. So basically, Fitch predicted a 15% a drop in Dubai property prices by 2026, citing record-breaking project launches and an oversupply risk with over 150,000 new units expected in 2024 alone. But here's the catch.
But one of Dubai's leading property voices is pushing back. Firas Al-Masadi, CEO of FAM Properties, says the forecast paints an incomplete and misleading picture of the market. There is oversupply in some off-plan pockets, he admits, but certainly not for ready residential units or offices.
Al-Masadi basically said that market growth has slowed, but you know, that's not a crash, it's maturity. He said that this is a natural course of business in a developed market, challenging the idea that Dubai is facing broad oversupply pressures.
And crucially, he highlights that only 12,000 of the projected units are near completion, representing just 4% of future supply. That's what influences short-term prices, Al-Masadi explains. The rest of the supply is still years away from delivery.
So calling Fitch's projections unfiltered and inaccurate, he notes that the agency forecasted 120,000 handovers in 2026, while actual planned handovers stand at just 71,000. And I think with Al-Masadi, he's completely right, Majid, because if you actually think about it, if they're saying that there's over 100,000 handovers by 2026, but, you know, he's bringing out these new numbers and he's like, no, the handovers are 71,000 units. What this basically tells me is that their data is precise, but it's not accurate.
Yeah.
It's not accurate. They basically took all of the units, all of the homes together, whether it has a late handover date, an early handover date, and they just added it together, and that's how they came up with their number.
So if you look at it mathematically, very simple demand-supply graph. Everyone knows about it. Even non-economists know what demand and supply is. You need something, the prices will go up. You don't need something, the prices will go down. What the Fitch report in very short like explanation is, they say there's so many handovers that are going to happen within this year that people will have homes. So the demand will go down. Mm-hmm. And that is why the market will correct or come down 15%. But then Masadi comes in and he very clearly says that whatever handovers they've quoted, 120,000, it's not in this year. Mm-hmm. It's over the next 2, 3, 4 years. So mathematically, Al-Masadi is right. Firas is right.
Yes.
Mathematically, Fitch is not wrong, but they took a longer view of the data. But then their report was wrong in saying that 15% correction will come within this year.
Yeah, their data is precise, but it's not accurate.
Yes.
Like the numbers, they came up with it well, but it's just the accuracy. Like they're just so off point. But just so
I would say both of them are correct. But one, in the long term, that whenever all those handovers happen, people will get homes. As soon as delivery is done, demand is met, the prices will come down. Not dramatically, it won't be like 100% decrease, but obviously there will be a little bit of correction. But since demand is still here in this year and the coming next year, I remember Dubai, Love in Dubai also did the story. We also did that. There's like 1,000 people coming every day through the UAE.
In Q1, 1,000 people moved here every single day.
Every single day. So all these people need homes, need apartments, need whatever place they can get to sleep at least
they
or
do.
Like have a home. Have a roof over their head.
Yeah.
So all these people will need. So there is always going to be demand because UAE is growing so rapidly, population-wise, infrastructure-wise, everything-wise.
But, you know, Majid, like what's so interesting, I think, with this guy that's saying all of this, you know, if you don't know him, he's pretty famous in the real estate world in the Gulf, Firas Al-Masadi. Yeah. And he's basically the founder of this, like, top leading UAE real estate company, Fam Properties. They have, like, 2 billion dirhams in assets. And, you know, when you read into his story, I believe it was, there was this really special piece that was written about him. I believe by the National, or was it the Khalij Times? I don't, or it was one of them. But basically, the story was that he grew up in Syria. He's Syrian, Firas, and he basically he had this like he described himself as having the skill to sell, and from such a young age he could sell absolutely anything. And he used to sell shoes, and then at some point he wanted more for himself, and I believe he got a job. His first job was as a security guard in Qatar. And then from there on, he started working in the Armani retail store in the UAE. So, and the fact that in just a matter of years, he founded Fam Properties, and it's doing great in the UAE. It's being recognized by the ministry. His story is really inspiring. I think it's like an expat who came here and really made a name for themselves.
Yes. And a lot of expats have made their name in Dubai because, again, Dubai is the hub for everything. If you want to be, you want to start a business, if you're already established and you want to expand, UAE is the place to be, and Middle East, to be honest.
It is. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners across all platforms. You make this possible. And if you're one of them, we appreciate you. And if you want to buy a Labubu, I told you the secret, right? Go to Blue Waters. The little thing, no lines, easily get it. Take care, have a great day, see you tomorrow.